Hello, thank you for joining us today for another exciting podcast given to you by AD-Link Technology. Today we have a very exciting and engaging conversation regarding medical imaging and AI for clinicians and researchers. Today I have with me two very distinguished guests. I have Cam Buscaram. Cam is a CEO of Alafia AI and is a globally recognized entrepreneur and technologist. His focus was on pioneering the fields of computation, precision medicine, and high-performance computing through the founding of Alafia AI. His former tenure was chief technologist of robotics at Amazon Web Services, and he led the development, investment, and proliferation of ROS2, which is the robotics operating system, guiding cloud robotic solutions across numerous industries and applications. I also have with me Joe Speed. Joe Speed is the head of edge at Ampere Computing. Ampere is bringing native, cloud compute, and software-defined vehicles, robotics, industrial IoT, 5G, and space. Joe's been part of the Open Robotics 2 Technical Steering Committee, AutoWare Foundation Technical Steering Committee, Eclipse Open ADX Steering Committee, Apex AI VP of Product, and AD-Link Technology Field CTO. Thank you, gentlemen. It's so nice and a privilege to have you with us today. Okay, we're all familiar with AI and robotics. I think, you know, we all see the images of robots doing backflips, factory automation, you know, robots at Amazon taking packages and loading them into trucks, and driver vision. All of us now seem to have cars that have vision incorporated into them that assist the driver with collision avoidance and object detection. So what I really want to focus on is, how has AI been used so far in the medical field?
Thank you, Mando. Yeah, this is a great question. If you look at the adoption of AI across different industries, actually the healthcare industry is lagging in adoption. And that's actually a good thing because it means the opportunity ahead is spread across a number of applications as compared to other verticals. If you look today, how most healthcare workflows are implemented, they're still used, you know, paper and pencil to gather patient data. And because of some of the sensitive and complex techniques to manage that data for regulatory processes, it makes it difficult to adopt AI workflows.
Yeah, I understand, Cam. Every time I go to the doctor, they type on a screen the encounter I'm having, they take some notes, they send me notes afterwards, they write an order to go to imaging or MRI or CT if I need one, and that's a separate encounter as well. So, you know, back to AI. AI really is all about data. How it's proliferated the industry is just through the availability to harvest data and process it. So the relevance of AI being availability of massive amounts of that data. Why has this been such a challenge in the medical industry?
Well, Mando, if you look at the compounded annual growth rate of medical data, today is about 30%. And 30% actually of a very large base. And if you look at the aggregate of medical data, 90% of it is imaging data. The beautiful thing, for example, where the AI is mostly being developed for healthcare is actually in radiology. And the reason why is because radiology is actually a completely digital workflow today. A patient goes into, like you said, into a CT or MR machine. The scans are made and the radiologist could be sitting, you know, at his home and thousands of miles away, and he gets a case that he has to read. So that's, you know, that's the whole advent of teleradiology. And that's today where most of the AI applications are being developed. The challenge with managing that data is that, you know, even within institutions, most clinicians and researchers are apprehensive about sharing the data even within their own institution. So there are some silos that makes it difficult for collaboration and processing the data.
Right, right. Now, I see all the time commercials for, let's say, AI being used in historical family trees, AI being used for medical purposes. These are highly privatized and on a case-by-case basis, they're delivered to the individual. But there's so much more imaging data that's available today. There's lab data. There's that genomics data I just talked about. There's different phenotypes. How is this data accessible with all the regulations, as you mentioned, all the privacy rights? And how do you coalesce this data and process it where you get a single view of the patient and you're able to make really a diagnostic evaluation?
That's the transformation that the healthcare industry is in the midst of grappling with, right? So if you look at how most therapeutics or solutions are developed, have been developed in, over the last century, and we create one pill that can serve a whole population. The healthcare industry is going through two major transformations, one of them being we're transitioning from that model where we create one pill that, you know, can serve a whole population to a more personalized and precisely guided type of therapeutics. And that's where the multimodality aspect that you mentioned, if we're able to get, you know, lab data from a patient, imaging data, we're able to get real-time information coming from, you know, devices that the patient is using to get either blood pressure, sugar levels, anything related real time, and we're able to process, you know, all these modalities together, you know, we would have a much better view of the needs of a patient. And that's what the multi-omics revolution is, it's all about in reality, being able to process all the, as you mentioned, genomics, proteomics data, and get a more precise idea of what the patient needs.
But how do you gain accessibility to this data? I mean, before it was, you know, very guarded, you know, by various research institutions. How are you able to access this data and make it relevant for the type of processing in your device?
Yeah, so that is a good question, and that is changing. That is, there's a number of institutions that are coming together to provide access to patient records. For example, here in Florida, we have an alliance where there is a database of about 22 million patient records that can be accessed given the right IRB study proposal and things like that. Other institutions are doing the same. There are also open source data science organizations that are making the data more available to developers. And I think that is key today to be able to increase the number of applications that would be developed. Today, there is actually if you compare it to other fields, there are not as many developers building healthcare applications. So that would be an opportunity for developers.
I know too, to actually process the data before, you know, corporations had to hire compute time or rent compute time from either Amazon, Microsoft, and Google cloud services. They take massive amounts of data, start their workflows, you know, walk away, come back in, you know, a week or whatever, finally get their results. Today, so much data is generated right at the edge when you're talking about imaging data, when you're talking about various other aspects of the data. It tends to be too large to actually take that data, bring it up to the edge, and actually process it and bring it back down for analysis and results. Edge computing has always been a fascination of mine. We spend a lot of time at it. How have advancements in compute technology driven the use of AI for imaging right at the edge, right where the data is gathered at the patient encounter or where the data is being, you know, crunched? Where is that data being generated? And just how much more compute do you need? How has that compute become more available and makes it feasible to have it processed right where the encounter occurs?
Yeah, so there are use cases like digital pathology, for example, where, you know, and digital pathology is essentially the digitization of taking a whole slide image that traditionally a pathologist would look under a microscope. Now there are machines that can take a blood sample or a tissue sample and generate an image that's probably about a million pixels by a million pixels, that it's not really possible to process that image by someone visually. So you actually have to run algorithms for segmentation, cell detection, cell counting, and things like that. So type of workflows, you know, like digital pathology, are areas where, you know, high amounts of compute and fast, you know, memories and big caches can help process, you know, those workloads real time. You know, for something like digital pathology, it would be critical for an oncologist to receive it just as soon as possible.
Right. I know, too, there's been so many advancements in CPUs. You know, it's in the embedded industry. I've been involved for many, many years. You know, before we were dealing with 4-core, 8-core, you know, you're lucky to get a 10-core processor and a very low-end GPU. Right now, you have, you know, huge amounts of cores available, both on the CPU and the GPU side. Just, Joe, if you can discuss how that's evolved and how it's really relevant for medical imaging.
Yeah, so like for Ampere's part in this, we developed these cloud native processors, CPUs, very high core count, a large number, like 32 to 192 cores, running at a fixed speed and very energy efficient. And so, you know, in the cloud, you have multi-tenant, you know, like many people are sharing these resources. Each of them have their own cores. User A can't impinge on the experience of user B. They have to be secure and isolated from each other. You need this freedom of interference. Years ago, when I started using the Ampere processors, I found it to be rather brilliant for things I was working on around robotics, autonomous driving, software-defined vehicle, because of these kind of behaviors, even though it was at the edge. And I think we see the same here for Alephia. So having this high core count running efficiently, it lets you run a large number of workloads in parallel. And the energy efficient and low power in the data center level, that matters for like rack density and sustainability of the data center. For Alephia, all of this efficiency and low power contributes to their ability to pack 128 core processing with hardware accelerators into a slim all-in-one design for their super workstation. And the ability to do that with the compute processing, with on-CPU inference, with heterogeneous workloads distributed across CPU and accelerators and all of that.
Yeah, that's amazing what could be done now that was never before achieved in the user's hands. Cam, tell us about the Alephia AI platform. You, I, and Joe were at a conference last week. You showed me some amazing pictures of your platform with the back opened and kind of showed me the density of the compute. How did you manage to harness that much CPU density, GPU density, all that compute for AI processing and general purpose computing in an all-in-one solution? And if you wouldn't mind telling us, how does one get started exploring with your technology for their imaging needs?
Right, Mando, you know, we're building a precision medicine platform that can ultimately accelerate the discoveries that are done today and the path from to go from a discovery to a clinical implementation. If we look at what we believe is one of the largest, you know, one of the most fundamental problems in healthcare is that if there is a discovery for a new therapeutic or a new approach, it usually takes 15 to 20 years to move that discovery to a clinical setting and have patients being able to get value from that new discovery. And in reality, actually about 98% of new research never makes it past a research stage into a clinical environment. So our goal is to bring down that cycle by creating a distribution pipeline that can accelerate, take, you know, new research, new applications that are being developed, validate those applications, integrate it into existing applications. And today what we've done is we've taken, you know, most of the widely used applications in neurology, radiology, you know, digital pathology, and we have accelerated them, as you mentioned, with a bespoke custom platform that we have developed that we believe will give clinicians a capabilities that they haven't seen before. And because of the beauty of, you know, leveraging off-the-shelf hardware and, you know, compute from our friends at Ampere and AD-Link, you know, that it will be well maintained and supported for as long as we shall live, or 12 years of software maintenance guarantee, right? So the easiest way to get started is actually sending us a note, and you know, we can bring a system for demonstration. We have some of our early customers started by simple conversations, and you know, they've been able to take workflows not possible done before, something like for depression treatment in neurology. There's something called trans, transcranial magnetic stimulation, they've been able to accelerate those workflows to go from, you know, pre-processing an fMRI data set to being able to simulate it real time and being able to figure out how to best provide guidance to the clinicians how to place their the magnets. That's one example of a workflow, and there are numerous workflows like that one in neurology that can be accelerated. So drop us a note and we'll be happy to engage.
All right. I know, like I said, I've been in the embedded space for several decades. And when I saw your machine and saw how much compute you can get into an all-in-one monitor, it was truly impressive. Thank you, Cam. Thank you, Joe, for joining us today. This has been a fascinating discussion about AI and medical imaging. We hope everyone's enjoyed it as much as I have. We can spend hours on this topic, but our time was limited. We appreciate it, and we hope you join us for our next podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Mando.
Thank you. I appreciate it.